Eufy is sponsoring today's video. They reached out to me. I tested out their video lock. It is a game changer. I'm going to paint a picture for you for why I'm so excited to work with them. So you're getting home, your arms are loaded with groceries or packages or boxes or everything, and your keys are in your pocket. This drives me nuts. This happens all the time. I upgraded to the Eufy video lock, fingerprint, tap, I'm inside. And honestly, I also feel way safer. It's got this awesome built-in camera. So whether it's a package delivery or late night Uber order, I see exactly who's there right from my phone. There are no more mystery knocks. And the best part, this thing was such a breeze to set up. There's no wires, there's no drilling. There's also no monthly subscription fees. So if you are done fumbling with your keys, because I definitely am, search for Eufy Video Lock or head over to eufyofficial.com/video lock. Your front door, your sanity. Welcome to Success Story. I'm your host, Scott D. Clary. The Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot Podcast Network. The HubSpot Podcast Network has incredible podcasts like Nudge, hosted by Phil Agnew, where you'll learn the science behind great marketing with bite-sized 20-minute episodes packed with practical advice from world-class marketers and behavioral scientists. Nudge is fast-paced and insightful, with real-world examples that you can apply to your business. Listen to Nudge or Success Story wherever you listen to your podcast. Today, my guest is Ben Nemtin. He is the number one New York Times bestselling author of What Do You Want to Do Before You Die? A book that illustrates 200 of the wildest things to do before you die. Now, Global Gurus has recognized him as the world's third best motivational speaker behind Simon Sinek and Tony Robbins. He is also the star of MTV's highest rated show ever on iTunes and Amazon called The Buried Life, which documents four childhood friends' mission to pursue the world's greatest bucket list while encouraging others to go after their own. The show has inspired millions to follow their dreams and has been featured on The Today Show, The Oprah Winfrey Show, CNN, Fox, NBC News, and more. Over a decade ago, Ben was battling with depression, which led him to drop out of college. And to feel more alive, he and three friends created a bucket list of 100 things to do before you die. And they borrowed a rickety old RV, which they used to crisscross North America, achieving the unthinkable. They planned to take 2 weeks, but 10 years later, they're still on their mission. And every time they accomplish a dream, they help a complete stranger cross something off their own bucket list. Their journey has been all the way to the White House, where they played basketball with President Obama. They've had a beer with Prince Harry. They've reunited a father and son after 17 years. They surprised a girl with a much-needed bionic arm. President Obama called Ben and the group and The Buried Life inspiration for a new generation, and Oprah declared their mission truly inspiring. Now, we spoke about the origin story behind starting The Buried Life. We spoke about helping other people check items off their own bucket list, reasons why people don't live on their own terms, the biggest regrets 76% of people have when they get to the end of their life, how to live a life that you won't regret, why it's so hard to be true to yourself, how a list can help, how to overcome fear, lack of deadlines, and waiting to feel inspired, which are the biggest impetuses and blockers in achieving your own bucket list, and then ultimately the formula to be successful at any bucket list item that you put on your list, how to achieve success at that item so you can truly live your best life.
So I grew up in Victoria, British Columbia, which as a Canadian, you know, is just off the coast of Vancouver. Not many people know that, but it's on an island, so it's a smaller town. And when I was going into university, I was living the dream. I had an academic scholarship to University of Victoria, where all my buddies were going. I just made the U19 national rugby team, which on the West Coast is a huge sport, right? It's like, I always say it's the third biggest sport in Canada behind hockey and hockey. So it's like, that's where the national team trained. My high school coach was an ex-national team coach. So this was like football in the South. So I'd made the national rugby team. So I was fired up. But I put a lot of pressure on myself to succeed. So we were training for the World Cup and I was worrying about my field goals. I played fly half, which is like the quarterback and the field goal kicker. And this pressure that I put on myself, I started getting anxiety. And this anxiety would hit me in the middle of the night. And I started to have trouble sleeping. And so this lack of sleep, this constant pressure, this anxiety, it all built up, and I slowly started to slide into a depression. And I had been a pretty happy-go-lucky guy up to this point. You know, I was A-type, I was social, a lot of friends, great family. But now this anxiety was stopping me from going to school. So I dropped out of school, and it was stopping me from going to rugby practice. So I got dropped from National Rugby. It was crippling. Yeah. I was stuck in indecision. So what my anxiety, the way it sort of manifested was I couldn't decide whether I could go to school or not. So I'd be stuck in this indecision, and ultimately that indecision would lead to my decision, which would be not going, just because I was in the middle. So I'd drive to school and I couldn't get out of the car. I drove back home. Or I would get all my rugby stuff, but I couldn't go to practice. And this was, you know, for someone that had never experienced anything like this, it was terrifying, right? And I got to the point where I couldn't leave the house. And my parents they tried many things to help, and nothing was really helping. And they would just encourage me to just go for a walk every day. And sometimes I would pretend to go for a walk and hide in the driveway. So it was very, very bad. And these feelings lasted for months. I dropped out of school, as I said. And at the end of the school year that I dropped out of, my friends came and they literally sort of pulled me out of the house. And they're like, "You're coming to work with us in Banff, Alberta for the summer. You're going to come work with us in a new town. We're going to go live and work there for the summer. We want you to come." And I reluctantly agreed, right? They sort of forced my hand. And when that happened, I was forced to get a job. So I started to slowly get a bit of self-confidence because I was doing something for myself. I was starting to talk about what I was going through to my friends. I started to realize that I wasn't the only one that was going through these feelings or had experienced some of this stuff. And at that point, I just thought I was totally broken, right? I just thought I was messed up. And I didn't realize that other people had actually experienced these types of feelings of anxiety and depression because no one had talked about it. I hadn't talked about it. People weren't talking about mental health back then. This is 2002. So I start to realize, wow, okay, I'm not the only one. And that helped. But the other piece that was ended up being really pivotal for me was I started to meet new types of people that I realized were giving me energy. And I started to understand that some people gave me energy and some people drew energy from me. And at that point, I needed to be around people that gave me energy. I met these kids that had started businesses. I met these kids that already traveled. And I was energized just by being around them. And so on my way home after that summer, I was starting to feel back to myself. But I also mentioned that I also found a therapist, you know, and that ultimately was the biggest piece of my recovery. So I don't want to underplay that it was just sort of finding people that gave me energy. There were many things that contributed, and we can speak to that a little later on. But just for the sake of condensing this story, the thing that was pivotal in terms of a decision that changed my life at that time was on the way home, as I was driving back to Victoria, I made a decision. I thought, you know what? I'm going to try and only surround myself with people that inspire me, just like these kids I met. So when I get back home, I'm going to try and only surround myself with people that inspire. And that decision would totally change my life, because I got back home and there was only one kid that came to mind when I thought about my friends. I didn't even know him very well. His name was Johnny, and he was a filmmaker, and he was going to McGill at the time in Montreal. But he grew up in Victoria, and he always made movies in the neighborhood. And I thought, man, I want to make a movie. So I called him up. I said, "Johnny, you make movies. I want to make a movie. Let's make a movie." And that was kind of like a scary phone call to make because I didn't know the kid. I was just like, And he was like, "I was just talking to my friend Dave about something like this." I said, "I remember Dave. He was 2 years younger than me in high school. I'm going to call your older brother Duncan. How about the four of us get together? We can talk about making a film." And so we all got on Skype because they were in Montreal. And we started talking about this film that we had no idea what it was going to be about, right? And so serendipitously, Johnny's in English class at McGill. And his English professor assigns the whole class homework, and they have to read this old English poem called The Buried Life. Okay, so it's called The Buried Life. And it's a 150-year-old poem. Johnny reads the poem because it's homework, but this poem strikes a chord, and he sends the poem to us. He says, "Guys, read this poem." And the poem, he's like, "Guys, this poet is talking about the same thing that we're talking about right now." And we were having these conversations about like we have all these things that we want to do, these dreams, but we never have tried to go after any of them. All we do is just talk about them. And we get inspired to go after them, but then the day-to-day buries them. And so this was the buried life. Like, you have these things you want to do, life gets in the way, you push them until you die. And you realize, I didn't do any of them. So we're like, okay, this dude was talking about this feeling in 1852 in England. We're not the first people to feel like this. Let's call our film The Buried Life. So we borrow the name. We're like, we're making this film The Buried Life. We don't know what it's about, but we know it's going to be called The Buried Life. And then our next logical step was like, well, what are our buried dreams? And the way that we figured those dreams out was actually by thinking about death. So we asked ourselves this question, what do you want to do before you die? Because we thought the thought of death actually put our life in perspective. By internalizing that, it made us really realize that we didn't have a lot of time. And so we asked ourselves this question, what do you want to do before you die? And the answer to that became the bucket list. So this was our sort of tool to figure out what was important to us. And our bucket list grew from there. And we just pretended we had $1 million. We pretended we had the ability to do anything. So we wrote down anything from go to space, play basketball with Obama, make a TV show, pay off our parents' mortgage, to grow a mustache, get something named after you, you know, drive across the country.
Literally, you know, anything and everything.
Ask out the girl of your dreams. Anything, if anything, that was the, there were two rules. Anything, you have to pretend anything is possible, and you have to pretend you have $10 million in your bank. So we had no money in our bank, so now we had to make some money to go on this road trip, because we're like, let's go on a two-week road trip in 2006, and we'll go after our bucket list, but we'll also, because we're never going to accomplish any of these things on our own, let's ask other people the question, what do you want to do before you die? And if we can help them, we will. So we'll do one thing on our list, and we'll help a stranger. That'll be sort of our mantra as we travel. And so we bought an old RV. We bought a secondhand camera on eBay. We worked two jobs throughout the summer. I was working as a beer rep for Molson. I would get my stuff done in the morning, visit all the accounts, and then in the afternoon I'd cold call companies pretending we had a production company. Looking for sponsors, we'd throw parties as fundraisers. You know, we'd be just beg, borrow, and stealing to get this thing together. We took out a $2,000 loan and we got sponsors on board. And a local juice company paid for our gas, Happy Planet Juices, which is like the naked juice of Canada. So now we're just 2006. We're taking 2 weeks off at the end of the summer. We hit the road, okay? And we don't even tell anybody what we're doing because we don't even really know how to explain what the hell we're doing. And what happened was people started to hear about this road trip. And emails started to trickle in through this website that we built where we posted our 100 dreams. And people said, hey, I saw your bucket list online. And I saw number 8 ride a bull. My uncle has a bull ranch. He can get you guys on a bull. Or I saw make a toast at a stranger's wedding. My friend's getting married. I'm the best man. I can get you in. Right? We got invited to 12 weddings in 2 weeks. And so news started to hear about it. And now it was national news. And now we're getting hundreds of emails. And we come back from this 2-week road trip. And we've had this incredible experience. We've helped people accomplish their goals just through the help of other people. And we get back and we're like, holy crap, like we got to keep doing this. And so this 2-week road trip ended up lasting 10, 15 years. And the list items that we originally wrote down that we thought were completely impossible, you know, write a New York Times bestseller, sit with Oprah, make a TV show, slowly they started to fall off the list. And then we realized that helping other people achieve their dreams actually even meant more than those big ticket list items. And so we just kept doing it. And we moved down to LA and we sold the show, we did the book. And what I realized is that this whole bucket list process, what it did for me was, it for the first time in my life, it gave me permission to say what I really wanted. And back when I was in high school, I wasn't living my dream. I was living the high school dream. I was living the dream I thought I wanted. Playing on the national rugby team, being the athlete, you know, being the student that got the scholarship, being popular. But what I wanted was something different. And finally, I was around kids that enabled me to be my true self. And by writing down what I truly wanted, it forced me to actually think about, what do I want for the first time in my life? And it was liberating. And I also let go of what I thought other people would think, mainly because we were just like, I had the confidence of being around people that encouraged me to be who I was. And this experience changed my life, right? And it completely brought me back to who I truly was. And now I've realized, wow, this bucket list, it's more than just adventure and travel, right? Usually you think about a bucket list as skydive, travel to Europe, you know, those types of things. But if my definition is a bucket list is anything that's going to bring you joy and happiness in a world that tends to bury that, because all your personal passions are the first things to get pushed under the rug, right? Because there's no deadlines for them. So we think we have all this time. Mm-hmm. So we continually push them until, you know, 76% of people realize that they're out of time, because the biggest regret people have on their deathbed, this is through research out of Cornell, the number one regret is, I wish I would have lived for me, not what I thought others wanted for me or what was expected of me. So this is a huge problem. This is the biggest problem on earth, that 3/4 of the population reach their deathbed and they realize, damn it, I blew it. And so how can we
create accountability? It's incredibly sad. It's super,
incredibly sad.
I was going to mention, I wanted to ask you just one thing on this point, because you actually mentioned something that was interesting, permission. Permission to look at life through your lens and fully understand what you want your life to be. And you realize this over the course of the buried life of your bucket list. Do you think that, and I want to keep going down this road, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I want to highlight the problem so people can try and start to solve it.
Yeah.
Do you think that people, like, where do you think a lot of people are in that 76% that reach the end of their life and they aren't happy? Do you think it's that people understood what they wanted, or they maybe didn't understand what they wanted, or they didn't even give themselves permission? Or what was the main thing that caused them to push off creating their own bucket list, living life on their own terms? Because was it internal influence, external influence? I'm trying to understand what stops people from accomplishing this.
Yeah, so I'll answer this in two ways. The first is by looking at the research. So if you look at Tom Gilovich's research, who's a professor out of Cornell, he found that there are three main reasons why we don't pursue these, call them whatever you want, personal passions, dreams, goals, the life you really want. The biggest is fear. The fear of what other people think, or the fear of failure. When we can talk about how to delineate what's a real fear and a real risk and an imagined fear, but that's what he found to be the number one. The second is that there are no deadlines, and so we think we have this time, but we actually don't, and so we've got to create accountability around our personal goals. And the third is that we're waiting typically to feel inspired to go after these things, or we're waiting for the perfect time. We overplan and we forget that action is the plan. So those are the three things, the biggest barriers. To answer your question, specifically around, like, what do I think, is it that they don't know what they want, or they know what they want but they don't go after it? I think it's both. I think that a big piece of this is that we think we're living for what we want in ourselves, but we actually aren't, because we've been conditioned to believe that there's this life that's going to make us happy, and so we're going down that path, but we haven't taken the time to stop and really think about what makes us feel alive. Like, what actually gives us energy and makes us feel like the best expression of ourselves. And so that's what I try and pay attention to, is energy. Like, when I do something, does it make me excited? You know, do I feel more like myself? And that's when I'm doing something, or that's around people, right? Like, I get energy from people, and I know that when I'm around people that are making me feel more like myself, they're the right crew to be around. And so I think first things first is stopping and going through the exercise of thinking about what you really want. And giving, as you said, you have to give yourself permission to dream. And you have to reverse the narrative in your head that it's selfish to have these goals or to pursue these things. And I know that there are a lot of people thinking, well, look, you were in college, like you had no family, you didn't have any responsibilities. Of course, you can go on a road trip and go do whatever the hell you want. Well, yeah, that's true. But that's not what the big idea is about. The big idea is, what can you afford, the amount of time, what amount of time can you afford to commit to focusing on the things that are important to you, knowing that it's not selfish, it's actually service. Because you can't be a better parent, a better partner, a better professional if you don't take care of yourself. It's the whole put on your oxygen mask before serving others. You can't serve others if you can't breathe, right? Like, you just can't. So the first piece is like reversing that thought process that you might have that it's selfish and I don't have time, right? Like, I got too much on my plate and I got too many people relying on me. And you may have a ton on your plate and you may have a lot of people relying on you. But do you have 1 hour a week to protect, to learn violin, learn meditation? You know, do you have 1 weekend a year to protect, to do that trip with your family, with your friends? And you know, can you protect that time by creating accountability around that? We can talk about how to create accountability, because that's really, for me, been the biggest tool to drive me towards these things. But that's what I would say to you know, to answer your question.
So that's a huge responsibility on you. So you understand that 76% of people do not achieve what they want to achieve in life. Now, you've had this incredible career up to this point where you've sort of lived it yourself and now you have all the tools, but how do you deploy them? So what is the next step in your life where you're like, I want to help those 76%, well, actually, yeah, I want to help those 76% of people so that they don't regret their entire life when they're on their deathbed. So this is what you're taking on now. So what are the steps that you're taking, like, after you finish the buried life, now, you know, now what you speak on, what you teach over, even as like an individual, like that's like an incredibly intimidating task to take on, right? Like, I mean, people have mortgages, they have jobs, and we're not talking like I'm sure young people that are coming out of college, they can take your example and run with it. But what about people that have been in careers for 30 years, 40 years, that are 40, 50, 60? What do they do?
It's a good question. And the position that I found myself is, that's who I'm speaking to 99% of the time are business leaders, right? Like sales leaders, partners of larger companies that are, you know, throwing client events, larger C-suite groups. And I never thought I would be speaking to those folks. But the reality is, this is the human condition, right? This is a feeling that is getting worse, I think. You know, if Matthew Arnold, the poet in 1852, wrote about this, if he could jump on this podcast, he'd probably say, whoa, this is bad right now. You know, the pandemic, 100%. we're getting more buried by social media and less real connections. We have more stimulation that distracts us from who we truly are. And so the steps that I would say, and this is really why I wrote the Bucket List Journal, was because I was like, the only people that really know what I'm speaking about are coming to my keynotes. And these are people that are, they have to work for the company or they have to be invited to the event. So I wanted a tool for my friends and anybody to follow, to actually make this, you know, start this process. And a lot is around like creating your own momentum through action, right? So the first step is writing down your goals, right? It's such a simple thing, but it's very powerful for a number of reasons. Number one, it forces you to slow down and think about what's important to you. So right there, you're ahead, because 76% of people, this is their biggest regret. So you first and foremost have to figure out what you want. And I think that it's overwhelming sometimes to look at a blank piece of paper and think, what's my purpose? What's everything that I want to do in my life? And just, here's the manifesto, right? And so what I found helpful is, one, to put a structure to the list writing process. So in the Bucket List Journal, you write your goals in 10 categories. So instead of just looking at one big list, I've realized that there are 10 categories of life that reflect pretty much all of the things that you, the areas you may have goals in your life. And some of those are based off of Bronnie Ware's book, The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. So she's a hospice worker and she wrote this book. She found that, again, consistent with Mr. Gilovich's research, number one regret, wish I would have had the courage to live for me. So that's the number one regret. And we can talk about the other regrets as well. But when you think about like the 10 categories of life that you want to think about when you write your list, adventure travel, pretty straightforward. We all think about a bucket list and we think, you know, travel to Europe, you know, adventure stuff, maybe bungee jump, skydive, that type of stuff. Those are great, but that's one of 10. Then you have, what are your professional goals? What are your financial goals? What are your mental health goals, right? What do you want to do to reduce stress? This is obviously
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. Hiring as a small business owner is a major pain. That's why LinkedIn is supporting today's episode. You need people with the right skills and experience, but finding them can take forever. It is incredibly frustrating to keep seeing candidates who just aren't a good fit, and that's why LinkedIn Jobs has been a game changer. Let me tell you a little story. We needed to hire a graphic designer, somebody with specific tech and software knowledge and the ability to truly understand our brand. And I started with all the usual job boards, and it's the same old story. Tons of irrelevant applications. No one's really matching my needs. I tried LinkedIn Jobs and the quality of candidates was just on another level. People with impressive portfolios, relevant expertise. I finally felt like I was interviewing the right people. That's truly the power of LinkedIn's massive professional network. You're tapping into this huge pool of talent you simply wouldn't find on other sites. It's about finding those niche candidates you actually need. And with the right people in front of you, hiring becomes a breeze. Did you know that 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate on LinkedIn Jobs within 24 hours. That is how well their system works. Honestly, do yourself a favor and try LinkedIn Jobs next time you're hiring. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/excellence. That's linkedin.com/excellence. Terms and conditions apply, but it's definitely worth trying out. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. JOINDELETEME.com/success. Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's five brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's three more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive, and I bet you we've all been there, and maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay, and what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real, there are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks, or accounting professional to take care of all your financials. But here's the best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay.
Be the biggest category of life for a lot of people, considering so many people are struggling with anxiety and depression. Physical health goals, relationship goals. This is a big one. One of the top five regrets of the dying from Bronnie Ware's book is, I wish I would have stayed in contact with friends. That doesn't cost any money, but that means you have to identify the relationships that are important to you and invest. Invest your time in those relationships. Intellectual goals, what do you want to learn? Creative goals. I think creativity is an often overlooked pillar of wellness, because you think about when you're expressing your creativity, you're really being that true version of yourself. You know, that's when you get in flow state, when you're playing an instrument or doing art, or, you know, there's many different creative expressions, podcasting, you know, writing. So what's that thing that you can do where you get out of your head and you're just doing it because you're flowing? So that's a big one. There's a couple more that I may have missed, but you can go to writeyourlist.com and look at those 10 categories if you want to use them as a guide. So you write your list, because now you have a reminder that your goals exist. So as you get buried by the day-to-day, you come back to your list. And it reminds you what's important, because you've taken the time to think about it. You've taken something that's intangible, you're a thought, and you've made it tangible. So now you've taken a step, and that action begets more action. And you're starting to move, to create your own inspiration through action.
How audacious can these goals be? How big should these goals be?
I believe that you shouldn't have a big goal just because you think you should have big, hairy, audacious goals. Is that how you say it? Big.
It is. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think
it's a little bit. Yeah. It felt a little bit odd. Yeah.
So I've never actually said it out loud, but I think that's the saying. But yeah, it is a little weird. But the point is the big audacious goals, right? So do you say, you know, I feel like people would sort of do this. And when they fill out these 10 categories, they can fall into two fallacies. They'll set goals that are too small that are something they could they know they're going to accomplish it anyways. Like if, for example, like if you are a professional on a professional path, and I think of, I guess, like professional goals and monetary goals, but even like with, you know, your girlfriend that you're dating, you're going to say, well, you know, we're going to get married in 3 years, and that's okay, that's a goal. I mean, and if you're on a career path where you're making $80,000 and you write, I'm going to make $100,000 in 5 years, well, hopefully you keep up with inflation. Like, these are not like really audacious goals, right? Like, these are just things that are probably going to happen anyways. That's still important. But should the person be setting even larger milestones? Should the person be setting, for example, with a relationship, like, we're going to not only be married, but we're going to commit to like once a month or even once a week date night, and we're going to make sure that we're always in love and always best friends, and verbalize that and make commitments to that at this stage in time.
100%. So it's, I guess my answer to your question would be, there's no rules with your list. The only rule is that it's important to you. So with that being said, that could be a huge dream. I wouldn't suggest just writing down a huge dream because you feel like you need to do something really, really big. You know, I think if you check in and you realize this is really important to me, then yes. But what you said about relationships, I think that's spot on. It's identifying what's important to you and then starting to write down things that are measurable that you know, when you achieve it, you can clearly understand, like, I've accomplished this. So it's not staying in love, quote unquote, right? It's what are the things that are specific that I know that we can commit to, that we know when we've accomplished those things. So date night once a week, you know, checking in every 2 weeks to have a conversation and updating this list of what's important to us. What do we really want? So that it evolves as we evolve and as our relationship evolves. So I think this is a great conversation to have with your partner. It's a great conversation to have with your family, to do a family list. What are the things that we want to achieve as a family? I have parents that do summer bucket lists with their kids, you know, young kids that are, all the things they want to accomplish during the summer. And then it's with kids that are in college, you know, having this conversation about what's really important to you. And you said it, the next step in achieving your goal is talking about it. So when you talk with your partner, you say, hey, this is something that I think is important. I think we're getting buried by work and the kids. We need to protect time for us. We need to let's do date night once a week, at least once every 2 weeks, you know, and let's talk about it. And so by sharing that, right now you have accountability because you've spoken. So when you talk about your goals, you feel accountable to the people you've spoken to. And if you look at the big problem, there's no deadlines. So it's hard to keep yourself accountable. You have to be very disciplined just to, you know, get up every day and work out. But if you have someone knocking on your door, your training partner, or texting you, where the hell are you? You're going to get there, right? So so by talking about your goals and sharing them, one, you feel accountable to them. Two, they can keep you accountable. You don't want to let them down, right? You've expressed that this is important. The other thing that's great is when you share your goals is they're there to support you. So let's take the training, for example. If you communicate with your partner, I'm going to get in shape. I'm working out 3 times a week with John, my training partner. And it comes Friday, you know, and it's the third day of the week for your training. And, you know, the kids are crying or, you know, something hits the fan and you're like, I'm not going to go. And she's like, no, I got this. I know this is important to you. But so they support you in this pursuit. And this is what I'm finding in organizations is really interesting, is that when, you know, leaders give people permission to communicate what these personal passions are, then it gives them the opportunity to feel like they can be their true self, which creates a culture that encourages people to pursue their professional passions, but also be the person they are and pursue their personal passions. And when leaders support their team to do these things, it creates this really rich environment. And then you see people helping each other, right? Which is what I found through talking with, you know, when I come back to these organizations and continually talk about some of these ideas, leaders are they're creating goal funds, right, for their teams. There's bucket list Slack channels that pop up where people are supporting each other. So how can you know you in employee reviews and one-on-ones, you check in on the personal goal as well as the professional goals? Because if you think about it, work, the workplace, it's just structures of accountability. That's all it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's leaders to keep us accountable. Salary keeps you accountable. You don't want to look bad. You want to let your team down. So you can insert the personal goal into those same structures to drive you forward. So, you know, that's a little bit about like the next steps for you as a person. You write your goals, you share them. And then, you know, the work that I found myself in these days as well is helping these teams create environments where they attract the best talent, you know, retain and have empathy as a leader to be like, hey, yeah, I know you're a human being. You have dreams. We all have dreams. What are they? Let's connect and talk about them. Maybe I can help you. And that's a powerful thing.
I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, HubSpot. Now, because at this time of the year, we like to think about new ways to solve problems, right? New year, new you. We like to think creative, innovative, scalable solutions that make our jobs easier in 2023. That's where HubSpot comes in. It's a connected, all-in-one CRM platform that serves as a single source of truth for managing customer relationships across all your teams so that you don't have to worry about the time-sucking management and mind-boggling costs of multiple solutions. Best of all, it's free to get started. Learn how HubSpot can help your business grow better and get a special offer of 20% off on eligible plans at HubSpot.com/successpod. Is that actually, you know, we didn't even need to jump there right away, but I think it was an important lesson, the accountability piece. And I was actually curious about when you were doing your own bucket list, did you find that you had more success immediately because you were doing it with friends? And also sort of an add-on to that question, that bucket list, I've listened to some other interviews you've been in, and some of those items were shared items and some of those items were solo items. Did you find it was easier to accomplish the shared items versus the solo items, or was there any differentiation there when you were doing that own bucket list?
So we had individual items and shared items, as you said, but we all did all of them together. So, and that is actually the first time I thought about this. So for instance, ride a bull. I had no interest in riding a bull. I had heard any disc from rugby. You know, this I wasn't getting on one. Dave, one of the guys, was very passionate about riding a bull. He called dozens of, you know, outfits in Idaho and Utah. No one would let him on a bull. They're like, it's too much liability. You've never, like, no, we're not going to let you put that into your documentary. Finally found someone, and he did it. And Duncan ended up doing it last minute, and Johnny and I did not. But we all did a lot of these, most list items together, even if it was just one person's dream. Most of them were collective dreams, but the accountability of having those other guys with me,
riding a bull,
and even, you know, there's no way I would have done some of the things, streak a field and get away, no chance, unless I was forced into that position because they were like, we're doing this, you know, being a crump competition in LA, I can't dance, like this is a nightmare for me. You know, survive on a deserted island, you know, and just have to figure out a way to make a bed on the sand and live off coconuts. Like, trying to ask out Megan Fox on the Transformers premiere, red carpet. Like, these things made me so nervous, I almost threw up. But because I had those guys with me, and there wasn't an option to not do it. There was no option. And the other thing that I think is more powerful is like when I tell the story of starting that road trip in 2006 and getting to, you know, these bigger list items and make a TV show and all that, it really sounds like a great startup story. You know, it's just a rocket ship. From 2006 to the television show was 3-4 years. And we had many times when I wanted to give up. Right, when we got offered a show in Canada, by the way, a lot of people don't know this, but MTV Canada, after the first tour, we went to Toronto, we had made a trailer, we put it on YouTube, it got the front page of YouTube, we met with production companies in Canada, MTV Canada offered us a show. They wanted to own the IP. They wanted to own Barry Life. Mm-hmm. And we were like, we just kind of want to keep doing this on our own. Like, we don't want to, we want to make a show, not sell a show, basically. So yeah, we politely, you know, declined. The next summer, 2007, we got lots of sponsors on board. We got Palm Pilot at the time. We got Levi's. They helped us buy the bus. We raised a lot of money for sponsors, to enough to get a full crew from LA to follow us for 2 months on the road. Put all this money into the dock, got back home, realized how expensive post-production is. We had spent 90% of our money. We hadn't paid ourselves a dime. And we had turned down a show. We were broke. I started working in a bar. Didn't even know how to bartend in Vancouver. And I was like, we blew it, dude. We turned down a show. We spent all our money on this dock that no one will ever see. And now I'm working in a bar. I dropped out of school. I dropped out of school. And it was the three other guys, right, that in those moments when I felt so down, that were like, get back up. You know, we're gonna keep doing this. I randomly met this girl that knew her parents were friends with my parents, and I was on a random trip to Mexico and she lived in LA, and she was like, oh, this is kind of cool, you know, like I can maybe introduce you to some people. On a whim, I flew down to LA by myself, met some people, and started just coming down to LA, learning the entertainment business. Realized I needed an agent. Realized we needed a production company. We cut our own pilot from the footage we'd filmed. So this documentary footage, we're like, oh, let's cut a pilot. We had crashed the MTV Video Awards in Vegas, snuck in the whole thing, filmed it. We used that as a pilot. Ironically, we got in pretending we were filming an MTV pilot, and we used that footage to cut a pilot and ended up selling the show to MTV with that footage. But a lot of ups and downs, and if I was trying to do this by myself, I would have stopped after the first year, 2007. Yeah, so they really...
That's super important, but that's also a sort of like a hidden facet in being successful in your bucket list and your goals, because you have to find that support group. So
yeah,
if somebody is building out this list, they probably have people in their life. Of course, they have their family. They could have a partner, a spouse, whatever, boyfriend, girlfriend, but not always. So yep. If somebody does want to radically improve their life, you mentioned a few things that could maybe detract from them being successful at this. And I want to actually walk through those so people can understand fear, the deadlines, and the will, yep, the waiting to feel inspired, those three items. But I think the other item that could stop somebody from being successful is lack of accountability and those partners in their life that can hold them accountable. So I would ask you, how can somebody find people that can hold them accountable to the level where you held your friends accountable, they held you accountable?
I think this is likely a very common question, maybe because I get it a lot, and you know, it's like, I don't know anybody that's inspiring, or how do I find these people? And I think that's why a lot of people move to different cities like LA or New York, because it feels like there are creative, inspiring people there. It doesn't mean that you're going to find those people though, because there's also a lot of other types of people in these cities, and you can get caught up in the wrong types of crowds. So I'll give you my experience of what led me to this, and then what I think would help. So even before I called up Johnny on the phone, who was the filmmaker, and I was like, you're inspiring, I want to hang out with you, let's make something. About a year before, a guy that I knew from high school, he was younger than me, and he was in high school and I was in university, he started a clothing line out of nowhere. I was like blown away. A really cool clothing line, and I was so flabbergasted. I was like, how did you do that? You don't have any experience in fashion. He's like, what do you mean? I just took out a loan and I did it. I was like, wow. I was like, can I get involved? Like, can I? So immediately I was drawn to this person. I was inspired by him, and I asked if I could help. Not thinking about anything other than I was drawn to this dude because he was doing this thing. And so I asked him if I could help. And he said, yes, I need press. Maybe you can get me some press, you know? And there was this, and these are the days of like cool hunting blogs, you know, where people would just post stuff they thought was cool, and like they would just get, it was the greatest gig of all time. You just get sent all this cool stuff, and if you really liked it, you'd post a photo of it, right? So there's this guy, Josh Spear, who had a website, joshspear.com, and I saw him on the front page of the Toronto Star. It was like the style section or cool. It was the lifestyle news. Like, if Josh says it's cool, it's cool. So this is early 2000s, and I was like, I bet you he would like this, my friend's clothing line. Anyways, got in contact with him. Just sent him an email. He got back to me through his website. I was like, wow, I got in contact with this guy. We sent him my friend's clothing. He did a post about it. I was like, holy crap. Like, that was easier than I thought. I was like, if my friend made a clothing line, I wonder what I could do. And I was like, I want to make a movie. So
you found a way to get into his life, like through providing tons of value, through associating with him, through you built a relationship by being, listen, like, and then you showed up too, which is another important thing too. Like when he asked for help or whatever it is, like, you showed up.
Exactly. And then, you know, he was friends with Johnny. So I started hanging out sort of with his friends. So, you know, like-minded people tend to hang out with each other. So my advice is find one person that you think is doing something cool or that is inspiring you, you know, in some way, shape, or form. And if you know them a little bit, just try and get to know them a little more and see if you can get to know their friends, because likely they run in a circle of like-minded people. And you sort of try and go down that rabbit hole to open up your circle to these types of people. And you're following your energy. So you're not following, it's not necessarily tactical where you're like, this person's successful, I need to hang out with this person. They're making a lot of money or they're doing this. Like, what are the people that make you feel more alive? Who are the people that give you energy and inspire you? Because by surrounding yourself with inspiring people, by osmosis, subconsciously, you feel that you can do good, great things because you see your friends doing these things and you realize, well, if they did it, well, I wonder what I could do. The flip side of that is if you see people you don't know do incredible things, I think your initial reaction is, oh, they're smarter than me. They're better than me. That's why they're doing those things. But when you know them, you're like, I hang out with this person all the time. They're not that smart, right? They're not that great. You know, like, I can probably do this stuff. And so you're the high tide rises the boats. You believe that you can do great things just because you know these people. So your level of thinking subconsciously rises. And that's the power of surrounding yourself with inspiring people.
So three points that I want to go into, three points that can inhibit your success, right? Fear, deadlines, waiting to feel inspired. So can you go into those a little bit deeper? And then can you walk through how you would suggest somebody overcome these three main blockers for getting started and then succeeding at living your own bucket list and your own buried life?
Yeah. So the top three barriers. Number one, fear. Fear of what other people think or fear of failure. Very common fears. We all feel those fears. I look at these as taxes you have to pay to achieve your goals. These aren't going away, right? You're never going to conquer the fear. I speak over 100 times a year to lots of people. I still get stage fright. I know that this is part and parcel with doing the thing that's important to me. I'm pushing myself. I'm going to feel that discomfort, that fear, but that also is a positive. That means I'm growing. That's an indicator that I'm pushing myself to evolve. So when you feel this fear, know that part of it is excitement. Fear and excitement, anxiety and excitement, very similar feelings. So when I'm afraid to, or I feel stage fright, or I'm nervous about a talk, I think, wow, I must be excited. So I can shift some of that energy into excitement. So I think just the awareness that the fear is not going to go away and that it's a part of you growing. You know, to get to where you are, you didn't coast there. It's not like you conquered fear, right? You took risks. You had to put yourself out there. You're like, what are people going to think of this podcast? What if I fail? That stops most people, that fear. So first, the awareness that the fear is not going away. You're never going to conquer it. You got to push through it. And that feeling is actually net positive. Because what I found is that when I put myself in that vulnerable position, right, ultimately something positive is going to come with it. At the very least, I learned something about myself. Even a full-out failure is a positive because I've learned something about myself. Usually it's a pivot into the direction that I know that I'm supposed to go. And so let's look at like both of those fears individually. But I think at first is just the awareness. Now, I think it's important to look at what are the real fears. And don't look at fears, look at risks. What are the real risks? So are you risking your ego or what other people might think of you? Or are you risking your financial well-being? Are you risking the well-being of your family? You know, is your livelihood in at risk? Your mortgage? All of these things are real risks. So I don't want to be so just non-grounded in reality that the basic fact that you need to look at what is at risk. But I think that sometimes we inflate the imagined risks. So you can write down, what are the real risks? So now you know, this is what you're risking. And if you feel comfortable putting those at risk and knowing that, okay, you know what? If I fail here, I'm not going to lose my house. My family's going to be okay. My health is going to be okay. Then I think that this is something that I can take a crack at. So you sort of look at like this fear as, you know, if you're afraid to go after your goal or you're waiting for the right time, unfortunately you failed, right? Because you did not achieve your goal. So at least when you try and you fail, what you learn from that really outweighs any potential hit of your reputation. And I think the other thing that's kind of interesting about the fear of what other people think, because this is something that I struggle with, right? You know, this is something that doesn't go away. But the truth is, when it comes to the fear of what other people think, people just aren't thinking about me as much as I think they are. Right? They're busy living their life, worried about what other people are thinking about them. They're not thinking about me all the time. And so they're also more supportive. Like when we finally had the courage to talk about what we wanted with our bucket list, the reality is people stepped up and helped. The only way that we cross things off our list is through the help of other people. And if we didn't talk about it, and we didn't, you know, it's really hard to say what you want and share what you want. Letting go of what other people think is really difficult, but you give them the chance to help you. And if you don't talk about it, no one can help you. And we found that people stepped up in unexpected ways. So that is the fear piece, which is the biggest, which I think, you know, is the number one barrier. And then the second two barriers, very quickly, there's no deadlines. So we push these personal goals. So we need to create accountability. And that means that we need to write down our goals, because then you create a bit of accountability. We need to share our goals, because that creates accountability. We need to have accountability partners check in with us. If you want to increase your chances of success by 77%, you send regular updates to your accountability buddy, right? So if you say, I'm going to write my next book this year, I'm like, great, send me a chapter a month. Send me what you've been working on every month. If you say on the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, I'm pleased to announce I'm writing my next book. You're going to write the book because...
100% you're going to write the book, yeah.
You told everybody, right? Everyone's going to be like, how's the book coming? It's like, crap, I gotta write this thing. And so those are ways to create accountability. You can you block it out in your calendar. You know, just like you put in your calendar, you have a podcast recording. It's very rare you're going to miss that, right? With the big guests 100%. Coming in, like you're protecting that time. You need to have the same vigilance in protecting time for your personal goals, these personal passions. So that means protecting it, putting it in your calendar, communicating it with people, you know, setting precedents. You know, if you do a trip with your friends and it's every once a year you do it on the same weekend, that's great because that's happening. You have a group of friends, you're going on that trip, and you do it every year. You're keeping each other accountable. You know the date. Your family knows it's important to you. That is the type of accountability that you need to drive you forward. So, the third barrier is what is it? So, no accountability, fear.
Waiting
to feel inspired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think we all feel, right? Like pandemic hit, I rushed out. I'm like, perfect. Grabbed a guitar, bought it. It's sitting in the corner. I'm just waiting to feel inspired to pick up and play. Like the inspiration is never going to hit, but you create your own inspiration through action. And the trick is sometimes we feel like we need to know the path to success. I'm sure you didn't know how the hell you're going to build a successful podcast and brand when you started.
I had no clue, did know that if I did it, you know, 1,000 times, then it would figure itself out eventually.
Exactly. So you would learn by doing. And so you don't need to know the full path to success. Those initial small steps, you build your own inspiration through action. So it's literally, you know, throwing a snowball over a hill, the momentum, it grows. So that's why you want to create very easy steps in the beginning, like writing it down, like talking about it, these things that will start to, you know, what are the smallest things? In the bucket list journal, when you start a list item, you break it down into 48-hour action items. What are the three things you can do in the next 48 hours? Let's create the momentum, you know? And so this you're sort of the architect of your own inspiration through action. And sometimes, like we were talking before, you over plan. We love to plan, right? We'll plan till we die. And then we'll forget that action is the plan. Like action is the plan. So your plan is to learn as you go. And you'll, even if you don't know the second step, just the first step, you'll figure out the second after the first. So in short, you create accountability to move yourself forward. You create your own inspiration through action, and you identify real fears and imagine fears and understand that you're really the architect of this whole process.
I love it. And I want to sort of take a concept that we spoke about at the beginning and then bring it back at the end, because you do speak about mental health a lot, and we didn't explicitly address it, but you solved the issues and the stress you had in your life through a variety of mechanisms. Yes, there was more formal, like a therapist and whatnot, and surrounding yourself with people with great energy. But talk to me about goal setting, mental health, what it helps you accomplish, some of the things that you've noticed that have improved your life and maybe your clarity of thought and your mental health and well-being as you've gone through this process. Because you have a mental health toolkit that you speak about, and obviously it's been something that's been very personal in your life as well. So why is that a topic that you still speak about, even many, obviously there's been some impact. So I want to break that down for people as well. So it's not just the tangible do the next thing and it's great, we set a deadline for a promotion, I got the promotion, but there's psychological benefits as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think first and foremost, I think it's important to just be clear that, like, I didn't cure my depression through a bucket list. You know, I think that what a bucket list did for me was that it helped me identify the things that are going to make me happy and bring me a sense of joy. And so that's fairly intuitive, but it's also overlooked. You know, like, what are the small things that are going to bring you that sense of joy? And that's the core of what a bucket list is. And that's something I stumbled into because I realized in now reflecting that I wasn't living for me. So I think that a lot of people are unhappy because they're not living for them, which when you're not in alignment with who you are, I think that causes some unhappiness. Now, the other thing that I think is important to talk about is that I've been through a couple pretty severe depressions since that first depression. Now, they weren't as debilitating as the first, but I am someone who is prone to these types of feelings. And the thing, though, that I've realized is that anytime I go through any type of depression or struggle, I do really learn things about myself. And that's where the mental health toolkit came for me, was that realizing out of necessity, I need to understand habits that work for me to help me pull myself out of these dark times. And so I think everyone should have their own mental health toolkit of habits, you know, just work for you, so that when you hit stress, you can utilize these habits to pull yourself out. And also I realized that if I practice these things when I feel good, I just feel better. So these are just things that are good for me that ultimately sometimes get pushed under the rug because we get so busy. So therapy is a big one. Finding a therapist that you connect with, right, that you respect, that is good at what they do, that you like to talk to, is really important and also hard. And I think we talk about therapy a lot, but we don't talk about how freaking hard it is to find a good therapist that for you. And knowing that it's probably going to take a couple cracks and meetings with different therapists until you find someone that you resonate with. I like to think about the simple analogy that if you walk into a dinner party and you start talking with people, what are the chances that the very first person you talk to, you're going to like, that you're going to respect what they do, and you're going to have a connection with, right? And so the reality is it's going to take a couple people. So that's the same with the therapist. Like, you're just going to, don't be discouraged. A lot of people, they're like, oh, therapy's not for me. So really, how come? Well, you know, I talked to a therapist, it just didn't quite work. Well, try another one. Like, you try a couple, right? Because I think that's key. There's barrier of entry to therapy. So I don't want to just gloss over the simple fact that therapy is expensive if you don't have benefits that cover it. So if you can't talk with a therapist, keep in mind there's other options for you. There's lower cost options. You know, there's a lot of digital platforms now that you can talk with therapists virtually for less expensive. If you're ever in trouble, there's a new suicide and hot. It's like 911, but for mental health crises.
But so not 911. I've heard about this.
It's 988. So just dial 988. If you're ever in trouble, you'll talk with someone. That's your in your back pocket. There's also crisis text line, which if you don't feel comfortable calling, you can text crisis text line and get a response right away. So just knowing that, hey, this is part of the human experience. Like, if you're going through a tough time right now, you are absolutely not alone. Biggest thing I would encourage you to do is to talk about it, whether it's via text to crisis text line, calling a therapist, or calling someone that cares about you and just talking about it. Because when you talk about your struggles, a couple things happen. Number one, you give someone else the opportunity to help you. You get to break down what is really going on, and it becomes less scary. Things are so much scarier in your head when you're just spinning them around. But when you talk about them, they lose their power. And you start to realize, okay, I actually might be able to work through some of this stuff. So it's part of processing, is talking about it. So, you know, this mental health toolkit that I've learned throughout the past 15 years are just things that help me navigate this stuff. And so I can talk about some of them. It's some of them people have probably heard about, but I think that it's like the trick is getting these things from habits into routines. And so they are things like purpose, right? So that's why the bucket list is important. What are the things that are mm-hmm. going to bring you that sense of purpose? Connection, talking about these things. It's also meditation. You know, I really like transcendental meditation, mainly because if I can't sleep, I meditate. And most of the time I'm able to get back to sleep. And sleep is the biggest pillar of my wellness, right? I know if I don't sleep, I'm in trouble. Nature, right? It's proven that just being out in nature for 20 minutes, you don't even have to exercise, and you get an increased sense of well-being. In Japan, doctors prescribe forest bathing, which is getting out of nature, to patients that are feeling anxious or depressed. You know, exercise has been super important. We all know exercise is good for us, but you don't need 60 minutes of exercise. You could do 5 minutes. What I do is every morning I just get up, and before I get in the shower, and I build this into my routine. And this is what James Clear talks about in Atomic Habits, which is books around, you know, just implementing these types of habits, is a thing called habit stacking. So how can you pair a habit with something that you already do? So just like you wake up and you brush your teeth in the morning, right? If that's not a habit, you can start there. But you brush your teeth. Before you brush your teeth, you just do push-ups till you can't do anymore. You do sit-ups till exhaustion. A plank, put a pull-up bar, and just do as many as you can before you jump in the shower. And that for me has been key, because if I don't do it first thing, I'm not going to do it. I guess you just get too busy. So try these things. See what works for you. I put my toolkit on my Instagram bio. So it's like the one link in my bio, which is at Ben Nempton, and it's the download there, so you can check it out and try these things. And it also talks about the science behind them and how to get them from habits to routines. So, you know, one, the awareness that life's about ups and downs. You're going to go through it, and that's actually okay, in the sense that it's not abnormal. And you're going to learn things about yourself through this. You're going to build empathy for other people. And if you're really in a tough spot, you know, text the crisis text line, call 988, talk with a therapist, talk with someone. Don't keep it inside, because it's so much harder to solve problems on your own. Like, if you think about it, like, let's say you're, you know, running this podcast and you're trying to solve a problem. What do? You go to a mentor. You ask for help. You talk with 100%. A friend, and
why would it be any different, right? Exactly. Why would it be any different for your own health, for your own mental health? If it's not a business problem, it's still somebody out there can help you because they've figured it out before,
and the stigma stops us, right? So the mental health stigma is still there. It's getting better. One of the silver lines of the pandemic is that mental health has become a national conversation. Dude, I'm telling you, when I started speaking in 2018, my talk is a mental health talk, effectively, right? Like, all of this is about, mm-hmm. you know, being good to yourself so you can do your job at the highest level, you can do all these things. And I billed my talk as a mental health talk. No one was buying it, right? I had to rebrand it into the impossible as possible performance. You know, it still was the same talk, but no one was buying it. This was not a conversation in 2018 at the corporate level, right? At 4,500 companies, they weren't talking about much. Now it is, which is fantastic. And that's a benefit from the pandemic. The downside is more people are struggling. It's a benefit because it's become a conversation because it's a necessity. So we need to continue to strip the stigma. And the way we can do that is by talking about it through things like this podcast and other conversations with friends. Everyone has the opportunity to reduce stigma by talking about it. And we need to educate people so that they understand, now what do I do? And so that's also important. So just by having this conversation, it's important. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. And I think that the connection between mental health and purpose, which is really what this is sometimes overlooked.
I love it. Okay, so I have one last question to close it out. But before I ask the last question, most importantly, where do people connect with you? Where's the social, the website, all that stuff? You mentioned your Instagram handle, but other places they should go check out as well.
Yeah, so most of my social handles are at Ben Nempton, which is just my name. If you want to check out the Bucket List Journal, you can go to writeyourlist.com, and you can at least look at the actual 10 categories. Use those as a guide. But if you want to buy the journal, you can just search the Bucket List Journal on Amazon or go to writeyourlist.com. I encourage people to write their list and then share it on social. You know, like, tag Scott and I, you know, let us see it. You know, we can be your accountability buddies. And start this journey. And if you're thinking about, you know, all the other things you have to do today, and you're gonna start your list on the weekend, take 10, 15 minutes after this podcast. Just start the process now. Because I guarantee a year from now, you're gonna wish you started today. And if you think it's too late, you're wrong. I speak to a lot of people that start their list at 70 years old, 80 years old. A year from now, you're going to wish you started today. It's never too late to start your list. You're just going to, this is a lifelong process that you're going to continually evolve your list. That's why you want to write your list in a journal, not a piece of paper, not on a notes app on your phone. A physical thing that you actually care about, you treasure, so it's you're going to keep it. This is a safe place for your dreams to live so that you can come back to it and update it as you grow, right? So as you're having a conversation with your partner, you can update your list. And I think that, you know, what I like about the journal is that, one, it gives you like the do's and don'ts for writing your list, right? It gives you quick tricks. Like, you want to attach a timeline, you want to define your goal so it's clear, you want to name specific things, you want to make it measurable, and then you write your list in those 10 categories. And the purpose of the journal is to get you over those three barriers that we talked about. Create accountability, create inspiration through action, and move through fear.
I love it. Okay, last question that I ask everyone. After your career, after now you speak globally, you had an incredible TV show, an incredible life. What does success mean to you?
I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And success to me are two things. One, sleeping through the night without waking up. And two, because what that means is that I'm not worried about anything. If I'm stressed out and worried about something, I'm thinking about it in the night and I'm not sleeping through the night. And when I sleep through the night, I feel completely energized and I feel like myself. So that's the first thing, is sleeping through the night. The second is success is being true to myself. You know, this is, I think, a lifelong pursuit. It definitely has been a lifelong pursuit for me. It's very easy to get pulled away from that. It feels like so many things pull us away from who we truly are. And to be true to yourself and live that way, I feel like life starts to unfold for me in a magical way. Things start to happen. Serendipity starts to happen. I enjoy my days more. You know, I have more fun. I have more energy. And I'm happier. So that for me is the goal, And I think that if I can sleep through the night and I can live true to myself, everything else will fall into place.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. Hiring as a small business owner is a major pain. That's why LinkedIn is supporting today's episode. You need people with the right skills and experience, but finding them can take forever. It is incredibly frustrating to keep seeing candidates who just aren't a good fit, and that's why LinkedIn Jobs has been a game changer. Let me tell you a little story. We needed to hire a graphic designer, somebody with specific tech and software knowledge and the ability to truly understand our brand. And I started with all the usual job boards, and it's the same old story. Tons of irrelevant applications. No one's really matching my needs. I tried LinkedIn Jobs, and the quality of candidates was just on another level. People with impressive portfolios, relevant expertise. I finally felt like I was interviewing the right people. That's truly the power of LinkedIn's massive professional network. You're tapping into this huge pool of talent you simply wouldn't find on other sites. It's about finding those niche candidates you actually need. And with the right people in front of you, hiring becomes a breeze. Did you know that 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate on LinkedIn Jobs within 24 hours. That is how well their system works. Honestly, do yourself a favor and try LinkedIn Jobs next time you're hiring. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/excellence. That's linkedin.com/excellence. Terms and conditions apply, but it's definitely worth trying out. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success. Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family-owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's five brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's three more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive, and I bet you we've all been there, and maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay, and what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real, there are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks, or accounting professionals to take care of all your financials. But here's the best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay.